You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Don't you guys like that little song that I think that's so cute, the LA Talk Radio. Hello, all my luminaries, my looms, my beings of light, love, peace. All of those of us out there that are trying to do the right thing, want to do the right thing, can do the right thing, and will do the right thing, even if under pressure from anyone else wanting us not to. So today, I have a very special guest. We're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Kevin is a senior real estate and probate specialist. We'll get the job done. So don't forget to call him, 818-571-1508. So today, drum roll. Now, I am a military person. I think I've spoken about that many times. And in the military, we do marching and we have to do things in unison and you have to work as a whole group, not so much individual people. So today we have a beautiful guest. She's an author. The name of her book, it dropped last year, February in 2025. It's called Becoming Spectacular, The Rhythm of Resilience. And then her second book, On the Line, which is a children's book, is called On the Line. So welcome to our wonderful guest. She is a world famous first Black ever to be in the chorus line at Radio City Hall, Miss Jennifer Jones. Yay! Such a treasure to have you. Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's I feel honored to be here.
You don't look like you've ever been through anything. So when I found out all the things, let's get right into it. Number one, in order to be a Rockette or on the line, as you would say, you had to be a certain height. You had to be able to, I think it was 135 degrees that you had to be able to hold your leg to keep from hitting the other legs of the other women. How did all of that work? It reminds me of being in the military because everything has to be precise when you're marching and you're doing with everyone else. How did you ever get used to that in that story?
I think, just training to be a Rockette, I feel like the Rockettes already have like a certain mindset. So when you're auditioning, when you're hired, you already have like this like clicking in of precision, of, working as a team. For me, coming in onto the line, I didn't even know who the Rockettes were when I auditioned for them. So for me to come onto the line and to learn the technique at such a young age, it was kind of like molding me in a way, because I was there for 15 years. And there's certain terms that you can use in your head that they would say you're moving your arm through peanut butter. So you have like a certain, way of moving. Mm-hmm. For the kick line, it's actually, which I find very interesting, is an optical illusion. The height requirement for Rockettes used to be 5'5½ to 5'9½. And they have the little ladies on the end and they work it. It works its way up towards the center to the tall ladies, and you kick eye height and it makes it look like everyone is the same height and we're all kicking at the same eye level. So it's very interesting, the mathematics that Russell Market, the founder of the Rockettes, had for this line.
And the Rockettes originally were founded in the 30s or something, or in the 40s, somewhere like in there.
1925.
That long?
Yes. The Rockettes just celebrated their 100th year anniversary, 2025. And Russell founded them in St. Louis, Missouri. And his thought of having this chorus line of American women came off the British Chiller Girls. And he thought if he could get an American line of ladies that can do intricate tap steps and do high kicks at the end, that he would just wow the American people. Mm-hmm. And back in 1925, as we all know, Black performers were not allowed to dance on the stage as white performers. There was segregation. And throughout the years, that's why we have birthed all of these great Black dance companies like Dance Theater of Harlem and Alvin Ailey, Catherine Dunham. So, but you would think in 1987, when I auditioned, under the backdrop of New York City, there would have been a Black dancer. But Russell was still alive. He had passed down the line to one of his favorite ladies that had danced with him for years. And there was still that antiquated thought process. So it was Radio City wanting some change versus the thought processes that were on the line. And Hazel Ann Dukes, rest in peace, her knocking at Radio City's door saying, "You are not an equal opportunity employer."
Wow. So you know, that's why they say timing in life is everything. It was the timing, the right time that you happened to show up. How did you get to Radio City Music Hall? I know I heard a little bit of an excerpt from your On the Line book, and it was talking about your mom and how your mom really pushed you to go up there and be your best, and how she would have you perform in front of your dad after she saw that you really could dance. And the whole thing, how was that experience? You had so much support, unlike some of us did not have that. You had that. So what was that?
Yes. So growing up, my parents always had my sister and I involved in some sort of activity, dancing, baton twirling, gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And I just took to dancing. And they were also avid Broadway goers. They would go see Ben Vereen and Pippin, Jesus Christ Superstar. And then when The Wiz came to Broadway and very kid friendly, my parents took my sister and I to see it. And not once, but they took us five times. And each time it became more embedded in my DNA that I loved the theater. I loved holding my ticket, getting the playbill, walking down and being ushered to my seat, listening to the orchestra warm up. The overture starts, the curtain lifts, and then being transported into Oz for 2 hours. Oh. Mm-hmm. And then we would wait backstage for their autographs, and Stephanie Mills would come out, and Mabel King, and Hidden Battle, and driving home through the Lincoln Tunnel and looking at the playbill. I just knew I needed to be on a stage and walk out of a backstage door. So that's really where it sank into me that I wanted to perform. Fast forward 10 years later, studying in New York, mm-hmm. and learning the ropes of the business and how to find auditions. And I was waiting for my big Broadway break. A friend of mine and I were looking through the backstage paper, which is a paper backstage. List of all the auditions.
Backstage West and Backstage East.
Yes. And I saw the Rockettes. I blew through them. And my friend said, "You would make a perfect Rockette. You should go to this audition." But I did not know who the Rockettes were. But I was very nervous, intimidated at auditions. And the morning of, I just said, "I'm going to go to the audition. I have to shake these nerves." I arrived at the music hall. And when I did, I saw a line of women draped around the music hall, and one lady was more beautiful than the other. They knew how to do their hair, their makeup. They knew what leotard, they knew who the Rockettes were. They knew how to dress for the audition. And I just got on the end of the line and I thought, "Oh God, they are never going to pick me." And I thought about leaving to take my favorite Frank Hatchett jazz class, and as I was about to step off the line, my inner voice pushed me back and said, "Stay."
And I don't did. You love intuition? I love intuition. Never leads you in the wrong direction. Never leads you in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So when you became, let me back up just a little bit. So we're talking going into a situation, not knowing anything about it, being chosen. And then what was the daily regime? What you have, people don't understand that as dancers and models and people that have figures that they have to take care of, you follow a certain regime. You follow a certain mindset. You do a certain thing to keep yourself properly involved in what you're doing, engaged. And then also to keep your body toned, your mind physically fit. What was the daily routine like of being when you actually got chosen and you had to go into the work? What happened? What was that like?
So before I got cast for the Rockettes, I was doing dance classes. And so this was my first big job. So this was a change that I wasn't used to, like changing my routine. So it consisted of going to the Radio City, doing rehearsals for 8 hours a day, and then learning Rockette choreography. And also I was doing interviews and I had to learn Rockette history and media training and people telling me what to say and what not to say. And so that time frame, there was a lot going on. So I did not really have a routine. It was more of a learning process, of learning how to work in the professional field.
So you know how you have to eat. I remember when I saw Gia with Angelina Jolie, and she was playing the part of this very famous model. And I remember the her coach or her agent telling her, did you do your colonic? Did you do brown rice and vegetables? Did you do all of these things? Were you required to eat or be a certain kind of weight as long as you were affiliated with the Rockettes? Like you just couldn't go out and get drunk at night. You just couldn't go out and hang out all morning with your friends and eat pancakes at the neighborhood breakfast restaurant and all that. How was that on you? And you're young too. It's not like you're 30, you're a young Black woman that's just made history, unbeknownst to you.
Right.
What was that like being around all those white people all day long, you being the only Black woman and having to follow your cultural identity and what they ate or what the Rockettes needed to eat to be a Rockette?
Well, on an individual basis, I always ate what I wanted to eat. There at the time, there was weigh-ins, which I would learn of, that they would give you a certain weight range, and you would have to, before each production, you would have to weigh in between your range. Since the 100th anniversary, which they just had in 2025, they got rid of the height requirement and of the weigh-ins. So they don't have that anymore for the audition process. Anyone, any size, any weight can audition to be a Rockette. So that is a change. I mean, but, you know, the women on the line, some, you know, they did whatever they wanted to do. They ate however they wanted to eat. They drank however they wanted to drink. It was as long as you did your job, you would, you know, keep it. And also there was a roster intact. And a roster consisted of 36 women who were considered full-time employees, which meant we would get maternity leaves, we would get a leave of absence, we would get full-time insurance. I eventually got rostered. However, Jim Dolan, the owner of Madison Square Garden, the Beacon Theater, the Sphere, the Rockettes, he came in and he wanted to break the roster, which meant each woman would have to re-audition each year, no maternity leaves, no leave of absences, no job security. And he was successful in breaking the roster. So now, like most women have to re-audition unless they're asked back for the Christmas show, but they don't have a weight requirement. There's no height requirement. And I do have to say, even though I fought to keep the roster because I went through a divorce and I was able to go back to my job on the line to keep a roof over my kids' heads and food, food on their table. I fought to keep it, but the Rockettes never want for anything. nowadays. They never want for anything.
Isn't that something? Look at what you did. Look at all the stuff you did. Even know it. You just chose it. Like, look, just pick Jennifer to walk in at the right time and be Black and change the whole frame. So how was it to perform under pressure when your body's exhausted? You're doing what, 4 or 5, 6 shows daily or something like that? I know, I've been there. 4 or 5, 6 shows daily. How did you, and you had children and you were married. You're a miracle worker. What did you do to maintain balance? And of course you had to let something go, and that was the spouse. But what did you do to maintain the balance? I understand, I've been there. How did you... What did you do to maintain, to keep yourself from going psycho?
Ooh, so the one thing, it was very difficult at one point during Radio City when I had to go back to work because I was going through a divorce. It was very difficult at that time being focused on the line. After my divorce was finalized, and even still, you know, doing 8 shows a day, 8 shows a week, 6 shows a day during Radio City, 8 shows a week during on Broadway, I knew that I wasn't going to be dancing forever. So even though I was tired and I loved performing, every time I went on that stage, I just kind of like soaked it all in. You know, you can always give 100%, even if you're tired. That's still your 100%. It may not be when you're well-rested and like you're getting ready to go, but you can still give 100% when you're tired, and it can still mean something. And I gave it everything I could because I knew one day it would be gone. And I wanted to know in every cell of my body that I could give everything to the audience that was watching and to myself because I loved doing it.
Jeez, you've been the first for a lot of things. You were the first Black Rockette. You have been you're the first ever Rockette to be celebrated at the Hollywood Museum here in good old Hollywood. That's the first you got. They don't put everybody in the Hollywood Museum. I don't know what you think this is, but honey, you have to be the cream de la cream to go to the Hollywood Museum. And then also, one of the other things that you did that I want to talk about is that they have you are the only Rockette, I believe, that has you're a Black Rockette, to have your costume in the Smithsonian. How did they get your, is it in the Smithsonian? It's not in the Smithsonian?
Not that I know of.
They don't have a costume, your costume anywhere that's sitting? Well, what is the image that they showed on one of the shows, and it was you in red? Where was that?
That was at the Hollywood Museum.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That was the Hollywood Museum. Yes. And, you know, when I was asked to, you know, have some artifacts, you know, be laid in there for Black History Month, it's still very surreal to have it laying next to Muhammad Ali and his boxing gloves and Denzel Washington and Wesley Snipes, you know, I mean, Whitney Houston. I could go on and on, but to have, you know, my artifacts there and to people for them to come in and read it and know that, you know, my legacy is a part of history along with these other influential and talented icons is a profound honor.
When you actually got on the line and being the whole work of the line, I'm an abstract painter. So the whole beauty of the line seems like one flow, like when you do paint and you do go in a flow and you're going in all these things. What did you experience being a Black woman on the line? Did the girls harass you? Did, even though you were selected, were you like out of the clear, or did you still get a lot of racism and things like that come towards you from the women that you were working with or anyone in that staff at the Radio City Music Hall?
Osiris, when there's, change, there is resistance. And even when I first came on the line, there were people in the organization who did not want me there. Of course, there were ladies on the line who made it clear that I was not welcome. And I even got mail from around the country saying that, I was ruining their family tradition and they would never come see the Rockettes again. So, yes, there was resistance. I leaned into the ladies that were very warm and welcoming and wanted the line to be inclusive and diverse and, diversified. And I leaned into them to be the best Rockette possible. But also, I had my own love of dance, as I did with the growing up as a child, wanting to dance on that stage under the lights, wearing the lashes and the red lipstick, and walking out of that backstage door. And no one was allowed to take that dream away from me. And I got to wear the same costumes and hear the same music and do everything else that the ladies who did not want me there. And walk out and still be me, be fulfilled, and maybe not them so much.
When did you, I mean, like you said, everything was surreal. So when did you finally accept that you were really a Rockette? I know when it first happened, you're like, okay, is this really happening? And then you get pushed into the shove, the whole rhythm of the Rockettes and the language of that particular group. When did it set in? And after it all happened, and you went out there one day in your full version of Jennifer Jones, I'm not afraid. I'm really a Rockette. I'm going to be a Rockette for the 15 years. I'm going to do this. What happened in your mental frame of mind? You say that you went through those things and you experienced those things, but baby sugar, you have got to be very resilient in your mind to not to allow all of those things coming at you to prevent you from being the fabulous dancer, performer, and author and writer that you are today. Share
Oh,
that with us.
thank you. Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And to be very honest with you, I would never and have never experienced dancing full out on my own as the first Black Rockette at Radio City because I was never allowed to shine like that. It would take years of peeling an onion for me. Years, even after my kids, of ha not. Let me go back. When I first came on the line, I talk about this publicly. The PR person who is the head of Radio City pulled me aside right before my debut performance at the halftime show, and she told me that nobody cares about me, nobody cares about my story. I'm old news, and I'm lucky to be there. At 20 years old, I believed her. And I carried that for years into situations I never should have been in, relationships I've never should have been in. And it would take into my 40s and 50s to really unpack everything that I've done, all the barriers I've broken, all the women that are able to call themselves Radio City, Black women who can call themselves Radio City Music Hall Rockettes. Yes. And so I never got to dance full out in my joy of being able to, celebrate that. But I'm so happy now that, I've found my footing and my voice that I can speak about it and speak about some of my triumphs and some of my challenges.
I don't even know. I'm like, wow. I don't know how many of you guys did that. Lena Horne, all the people, these gorgeous, beautiful Black women that it seems like any normal human being were like, good Lord, I don't care if they're purple from the planet Zero. They're gorgeous. They're talented. I don't say you did it when you in 1987, and then the following year, I believe in 1988, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm going on notes and what I've read and seen your interviews. You did the Super Bowl halftime, correct?
Yes, I was hired in the winter of 1987 for the Super Bowl. That would be my first big performance, Super Bowl 22 halftime performance.
And how did, wow, I know the audience is like, wow, they got a Black Rockette up there. Or were you still the only one at that time, or had they gotten any more?
That was my debut performance. That was my very, so that was the performance. I was the first one at that point.
Share with us some of, can you still remember how you felt? Or because it's like, wow, I'm in front of all these people now and I'm Black, so they're going to notice I'm Black.
Well, it was a football stadium, so nobody could really see, you know, and then it was televised, but the cameras were all flying all over the place.
Yeah.
But I do remember it was 1988. So there were actually 44 Rockettes for 88 legs. There were 88 pianos on the field, and a piano has 88 keys, and Chubby Checker was the headliner. Gosh. And yeah. And I remember waiting to go on, and they called 15 minutes, 10 minutes. And between all the flags and the timeouts in a football game, it kept getting delayed and pushed. So by the time I got on the field, I was nervous, as we all were. But as soon as I heard the music, ran out to the field, I felt like I was at home. And it was one of the most performances that I've ever had.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm there with you. Like, that's my girl. You know, I've been one of those. That's my girl. I know her. Oh my gosh, Jennifer, what a wonderful legacy to have. Now, I know that when you dance on stage, especially in a unison troupe, like the Rockettes, what kind of shoes were you guys required? Did they have to have taps or something on them or something like that? And what kind of shoes were they, and what were they called?
The shoes were usually Capizio. Okay. And they would give us our dance shoes, and they would put the taps on. And there were also kick shoes without the taps, the wooden soldier shoes, you know, so we can all, you know, walk with our, you know, straight legs.
Really?
Yeah, they would give us, they provided everything from shoes to undergarments to costumes to even the red cheeks that go on our faces.
That rouge on there, that rouge.
They were their little fabric, and they have double stick tape. And you just put the,
So they put that on there to give the like a flushed kind of.
For the soldiers, yes. The soldiers and the rag dolls, yes.
See, I would have never known all of that had you not said. What was the, when you would go out and you weren't with performing or working, were you always aware, like, I'm going in the store, but I'm Jennifer Jones and I'm a Rockette, or I'm doing this, but I'm Jennifer Jones and I'm a Rockette. I'm not just anybody anymore. People have seen me. I'm a public figure now. How did you react to that? And then how did your family merge with you in order to fit your new life, I would say?
Well, I have to say people did not react to me like that, or notice me. So that really wasn't anything that I had to get used to. Like I said, like Radio City really like tampered it down. They kind of said, oh, we hired our first Black Rockette, you can get off our backs now. And then they kind of like put out the fire. And my family, they were very happy that that I was like the first Black Rockette and I followed my dream of dancing. I just have their support.
Oh, that's lovely having that. Now that that family support and everything.
Yeah.
Did you have to maintain the same? Again, I'm a military person, so I'm thinking of all the things that we went to the military, like how you have to maintain your focus and you can't be doing this. You know, did you have to maintain a certain mental discipline in order to be able to be in rhythm with everyone, or, you know, prior to that? And if so, at what point in the day did that mindset have to kick in? Like, did you come on like, look, I got to be a Rockette right now. I can't think of nothing else. The kids, whatever, I've got to shut everything down. How was that for you mentally and the kind of discipline you had to have?
Well, when I first came on the line, learning the Rockette technique and the language, I had to be extremely focused. And coming into my first Christmas show, most of the ladies knew the routines. They knew the numbers from the previous years. So I had to, you know, be on top of everything else. And when I wasn't in the rehearsal hall training, my kitchen became my rehearsal hall. So I knew everything when I went back the next day. But throughout the years, it would get a little easier because I knew the routines. I knew what was expected. But that discipline, that the mindset, the working together as a team, you know, you have to be somewhere on a certain beat. When you're doing a kick, the cymbal crash goes up at the top of the kick. You can't be midway. You have to be able to listen. You have to be able to know what your body's doing. You have to be in sync with the ladies next to you, especially in the kick line, that you're not, because a lot of people think that we're holding on to each other, and we're not. Mm-hmm. You're actually holding your own place while you're kicking, so you have to be centered. It would be an evolutionary process that would just become part of who I am. And it actually has transitioned into my life.
So your whole perfection, you perfected the ambience and the posture and discipline of being a Rockette dancer. That was your dancing experience. Did you ever dance on Broadway or anything after that? Did you go into theater? Did you go into anything that kept you dancing professionally after the 15 years that you spent with the Rockettes? What happened after that, Jennifer?
After my tenure with the Rockettes, I performed on Broadway in 42nd Street, the musical, The Revival, in which we won the Tony for Best Revival of a Musical in 2001.
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
Tony winner.
I got my Broadway dream.
Yes, you did. I remember you saying that. So you had a lot to do. Wow. You see, you didn't even know that what you were doing back then. Now, how did you find time to write 2 books and to, how did all of that come about? And what made you decide to write a book? You could have just been said, look, I was a Rockette. They know about me. I existed. But when you start writing books, to me, it's like, you've still got some story to tell that maybe people never heard it. So I want to talk to you, because I actually heard the host on a show reading from your book. You weren't on there. They had the book and talked about the book on the line. So she read the book, and then becoming spectacular, which you are, that's definitely the right word. When did you find time? Was that before or after your, well, it's clearly after, but did you start writing at that time you were being a Rockette, or was that years after you came out of the experience?
It was years after my Rockette tenure, but I had the idea of writing about my experience when I was on Broadway. Okay. And I would pick up the pen and paper so many times, and I would put it down because the thoughts weren't there, the words weren't right. I didn't have the time, but the intention was always to write about my experience, because so many people had asked about it, and I wanted it documented because people just didn't know. And I wanted something that people could look up and actually know what it was like for me to be the first Black Rockette.
Yeah.
And it just took years and years and years, because I would ultimately come to realize I had more to share about my life in hopes of helping other people find their gift or working their way through any challenges in life. And I'm hoping my book, Becoming Spectacular, can be a resource for that. And my children's book, On the Line, like I said, I just knew what I wanted as a young child. And I thought if there's another child out there who knows what they want to do, that maybe their parents can help nurture that passion. And to also, if a child doesn't know, to know that they do have a gift to give to the world. And maybe they don't know what it is, but as long as they keep trying and finding and honing in, and if the parents are aware of a gift, they can help, you know, push that along in that child. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And help them get through it. Now, yeah. You also won an NAACP Image Award. Yes. Yes. You're not the recipient of the award for NAACP for Outstanding Trailblazers in the Arts. And they have that as a big milestone for you that you won an NAACP Image Award.
Really? No.
You better check it out. Maybe you won it.
When was that?
It said that you won an NAACP Image Award for your trailblazing contributions to the arts. And if you haven't won one NAACP, you should be ashamed of yourself and get this woman an award for her contributions to the arts. But that's what I found in notes. Now, we have to check all of our notes, which is why I'm asking you different things that I found and heard different places. So I wanted to make sure, but if you haven't, you'll be getting one. Don't worry. Okay. It's coming. It's coming.
Thank you.
I'm giving it to you right now. Then just pass it on in the others. Give this girl.
Yes.
Her flowers. Just like I read about the Smithsonian, it would make sense that would have happened. So it made sense to me. Like, oh yeah, I guess the Smithsonian would have a costume of hers, or NAACP would have done that, seeing you're such a trailblazer.
Yeah.
What can we look forward to about this version of Jennifer Jones? Number one, I'm glad I live long enough to meet you in person.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I have heard of the Rockettes. I had the Rockettes mixed up with the Raylettes. From Ray Charles.
Oh.
Yes. And all I heard was the Kets. I'm like, do you mean the Raylettes? They're like, no, I'm like, who are the Rockettes? So thank you for putting me in touch with things that I need to know more about. But what can we expect from you? You look so young still, and you still got so much vigor in life. And then before we go, we have about maybe 7, 8, 9 minutes. I want you to talk about your campaign against colorectal cancer. You survived. What can we do as women out here to protect ourselves? Is it some program we need to find out about? Please help us, because I'm telling you, you don't look like you've ever been through anything. And then not only that, after I found out you had all of those treatments and everything you had to do, your chemos and I don't even know.
Thank you. Yes.
Talk to us about that and why it's so important for women to get checked and keep ourselves healthy.
Yes, I am a staunch advocate for early detection for colorectal cancer. At the age of 50, I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer after a routine screening. I went into my doctor's office and at 50, I knew something was off. And I asked her if I could kind of be seen soon. And she looked at me. She's like, oh, you're healthy. You've been vegetarian for 25 years. You work out. They'll schedule you when needed. And I went to the scheduler. Can I be seen early? So 2 weeks out, I go for my colonoscopy. Upon coming out of my anesthesia, she comes into the room and states that looks like I have cancer in about 5 years to live. I immediately felt shame. I was embarrassed. I was considered the healthy one in my family, and I did not tell them for a month. And so during that time, I visited a surgeon, and I went through scans and blood work. As soon as I told my family, I changed doctors. And upon changing doctors, I felt halfway healed. It is so important for anyone who is going through a health challenge to feel 100% comfortable with their doctors. They should not feel rushed out of a room. Their questions should be answered to their satisfaction. And just know that they have your best health in their interest. I went through 4 rounds of chemotherapy. During those 4 rounds, I did a absolute reevaluation of my life. I let go of situations that I should not have been in, friendships I dropped. I started even meditating more. I included more juicing into my diet. And then when I went in for them to see if the chemo was working, my surgeon and oncologist came in the room and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" They said that the tissue is almost clean. You can't even see where the tumor was. So I did 4 more rounds. I had my surgery in 2019. I was deemed cancer-free. Colorectal cancer is being seen in younger and younger adults, so much so that the American Cancer Society has dropped the age of the colonoscopy from the age of 50 to the age of 45 in normal circumstances. If you have a history of colorectal cancer in your family, you must go sooner. If you have problems with your stomach, if you're feeling bloated, extra gassy, you need to go to your doctor. Mm-hmm. And if they say, just go home, you have a gluten allergy, insist on being screened. Mm-hmm. It is especially prevalent in the African-American community and in the underserved communities because we don't have the resources or the education to get screened. And it is really important for us to know our family history. You can visit the Colon Cancer Coalition or the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. And if you don't have insurance, they can help you get screened or find ways for you and your family to battle this disease, if that is unfortunately the case.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, Chadwick Boseman, did he have the same thing that you had? So it was the same thing.
Yes.
And I think, yeah, they talked about the same thing about us being screened more and being having the information. But you beautiful, beautiful luminary. That's what I call my people out there. The people of light, peace, love. They're spreading goodwill, cheer, you know, and things that to help the planet, not keep the planet in darkness.
Yes.
I don't even know what to say. It's been such a pleasure talking to you and getting a hold the whole plethora of your experience and why you're still here, why you did survive. I mean, we needed you to be here and survive so you could tell your story. Do you feel, before we go, and then I'm going to do a few announcements, do you feel that you mentioned that you had to get rid of a lot of things in your personal life? And a lot of cancers can come from stress, not just diet and everything. Do you feel that the whole pressure of you being the first Black Rockette, all of the things with your kids, the divorce and all that had something to do with you contracting or contracting?
Contracting.
That dis-ease?
I will tell you that when I was diagnosed, I was stressed out to a 10, but it had nothing to do with me being the first of anything. Had nothing to do with anything like that, but just like personal reasons, I was stressed out, man. I'm telling you.
I believe you. I believe you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, hi everybody. It's been such a pleasure having our wonderful, beautiful author, performer, writer, worldwide advocate for all that is good, all that you can be, despite your color, your age, your whatever you think is the problem. This woman is here to tell you that you can do. Before we go, and I'm going to see if you want to have a last word to say before we go, let me give a shout out to Sam Hassan. Hey, Sam. That is the LA Talk Radio host and owner founder. He helps me bring shine to the show every week by being such a good person. Also, Shout out to all of my luminaries out there. I loke you. I love you for who you are, that you stand true to yourself every week, every day. You look in the mirror, you can face yourself, all of your dark shadows. You don't throw them away. You integrate them and let them become and work for you in your behalf. And I like you for being the kind of people that you are. Nice people, good people, kind-hearted, not liars, thieves, people like that. We're trying to brush them under the brush a little bit longer and bring up more people like Jennifer Jones that can encourage and inspire. And if you want to reach me, IG, I'm all over the place. I'm on TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram. Just Google my name, Osiris Munir, and you'll find me. And then before we go, I want to ask Jennifer, does she have any last words of encouragement, inspiration for all the beautiful Black girls out there that want to be a dancer, a rockette, or whatever you want to be? Do you have any words for those women?
Absolutely. I named my memoir Becoming Spectacular because we are all becoming spectacular. We each have our own footprint, our own legacy, our own unique gift to give the world, even though it looks like we are all doing the same thing. Every individual is unique onto their own, and every challenge that comes in is just is shining to make you brighter. Mm-hmm. It is an opportunity for growth. So shine on.
Wow. Shine on she is. Look at her. She's shining right now. That's why she's a luminary. Yay. All right, people. That has been our show for today. We want to thank again profusely our wonderful, wonderful, legendary, iconic guest, Ms. Jennifer Jones, our very first Black Rockette down in history. Girl, if you go, they will never forget who you are. You were the first. It's always weird being the first in something, isn't it? That everyone else has to follow behind what you've already set up. I think that's interesting. And I'll see you all next week. We'll have another show. Let's give a big clap for our guest today again. Can't thank you enough. And it was my great honor and pleasure to even say your name, let only have you on my show, okay?
And I thank you.
All right? Thank you, sweetheart. And I look forward to seeing more and more of this new version of you and what you're going to leave as more of your legacy. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Bye, Jennifer.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.